Ken Flack is with us on Sports Byline. We're talking tennis, and let me tell you, he has won, and he has played at the highest levels. I'm going to ask you about the two mixed titles that you won. That's the French and the Wimbledon mixed titles. Obviously, playing with men where you've got maybe equal strength, but you've got women, and you've got maybe a lot of other different issues, communication, chemistry, all of those things. Tell me about the difference between the two mixed.
It is a different game. I mean, it definitely brings its challenges, no question about it. I tend to call it the mixed troubles instead of mixed doubles because the man is expected to hold serve every time. The man is expected to really just perform superlatively and not miss any shots and help out and take this and that. And then, but if you start trying to take too many shots, and poach too much and help the woman out too much, then you start missing shots that come right to you because you're thinking, oh, I got to move, I got to do this, I got to cut off the cross court. And there's different dynamics. And there's a lot of strategy to that, and make sure that the woman has doesn't serve into the sun, doesn't serve into the wind. You try to take as much adversity away from her as possible because it does usually come down to holding the woman's serve. Unless it's Venus, she can bring it about 125. Most women, this serve's not coming in so good and so fast, and so that's a big deal in doubles. So you gotta get very creative and clever and mix it up with I formation, Australian, and all that kind of stuff.
Who did you look for to become a mixed doubles partner, and who did you double team with to win the two titles?
Surprisingly enough, I teamed with Kathy Jordan, Kathy was a top 10 singles player in her own right in the 80s. And she was, what I liked about her was she was very tenacious. She was very aggressive. She had a great forehand return, topspin return. So we put her on the deuce court and she'd run around. It was so hard to hit a serve into her backhand. She would run around and hit forehand, cross court, dippers, and then I could poach. And she had a decent serve. She was pretty athletic. She had played softball and things like that growing up, so she had a pretty good arm speed and was just, a real pit bull up there at net. She wouldn't back off. Some girls get a little timid around the net because they play mostly from the baseline. But Kathy was, in her singles, she would serve and volley some and those kinds of things. So she was pretty comfortable at net and was real fiery and competitive, and we had good chemistry.
Whether it's mixed doubles or whether it's men's doubles, I'm going to ask you this question. Talent also, always important. Mm-hmm. But what about chemistry and communication? If you had to break it down 33%, 33%, and 33%, would it be more one or the other?
Yeah, I would say that chemistry and communication and how your personalities meld and mesh and how you get along with your partner and communicate with it is probably the most important. I would put that at 50% because I would think that you're even if you pick somebody that you really like, if you're not going to pick somebody that can't play at all. I mean, you're going to pick somebody that's hopefully at your level or even a little bit better than your level would be nice. What'll happen is if you don't have good communication or if you're playing with somebody that makes you uncomfortable, makes you feel a little tentative and you're afraid to miss and you're afraid to take certain shots, it'll bring you down, it'll bring your level down, and it'll bring your partner's level down because there'll be this tension. They say, love is never having to say you're sorry. Well, in doubles, you really should never have to say you're sorry. And you could fall into that rut, oh, I'm so sorry, oh, I missed that shot. I'm like, please, if I ever have a partner that starts doing that, I'm like, dude, no, you don't have to say sorry to me, okay? I know you didn't miss that shot on purpose. Just, don't freaking do it again. Or I'll walk up this court, no. No, so you have to make your partner feel very comfortable because you want them to perform at the best of their ability because that's really important for the team's overall outcome and the result. So, if the chemistry is not there, you're not gonna get reach your potential as a team on the court as far as executing shots and performing at a high level. So, then you get the style, strat. Seguso was a big guy with a big serve. I was more the quick little guy at net that could, poach and good returns. And so if you have a big shot maker and a good solid player, those kind of things can blend well, A lefty-righty combination is nice. But first and foremost, you got to be able to get along.
Ray Knight and Nancy Lopez sitting where you and your wife are sitting here in this studio. And I said to him, tell me what it's like to play golf against each other. And, the stories were just hilarious.
I'll bet.
Now, you're a teaching pro, and yeah. I know you – You teach men and women, probably couples as well.
Yeah.
I mean, what are your favorite stories about, you know, women and men, especially husbands and wives playing together as mixed as a mixed team?
Oh, boy. You know, there's countless stories, I guess. I typically try not to remember them because, it you know, it's like, whoa, you know, there's divorce possibilities there. Even, I mean, I can just remember my parents, you know, when we had the court put in at our house, and they would have other couples come over, and, you know, it just didn't, my dad didn't have to even say anything. He would just give that look, you know, that disapproving look, you know, or grit his teeth, like, ugh, you know, and it doesn't take long for a few of those kind of, instances where they're like, okay, this is obviously not, possible for us to even be on the same court. And so, you know, in teaching, I'll come across couples that, yeah, no chance. They're that couple. It's like, no, they know already. They don't even think about going on the tennis court together.
You think
they
about, I wonder play. Which one's going to get the house. Right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, so they just say, oh, that's not even, you know, we tried it once. That's what they usually say. We tried it once, and that was all we needed to try once. So they always play with different people. Even if they're in the same tournament, you know, they're getting other partners.
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to switch gears a little bit because you taught down at Vanderbilt University, mm-hmm. and also you're teaching now. One thing I've observed with the young junior players, I'll go to a tournament and they just wail at the ball. Mm. They don't know how to have a touch shot or how to play things. It's always, let's see if I can hit it as hard as I can. What happened with the young player learning the complete game?
That's a very good question. You know, I think there's several factors involved. I think technology is one. The rackets are very, you know, they're conducive for really slugging the ball. The strings especially have become basically a good analogy for the rackets now is when I, you know, when I was a kid playing table tennis or ping pong, you know, we had sponge paddle. I mean, we had the sandpaper paddle. Right, or the little pips out one, but now when that big thick sponge paddle came around, and you would play somebody that had that with all that spin and all the power that they had off that paddle, it was like, oh my gosh, I can't even compete. So, in tennis, the same kind of thing happened. If you wanted to hold on to some of the older technology and the more, you know, basic type of rackets, you're just you know, swimming up a creek without a paddle. So these rackets are making it such that everybody's slugging the ball, but you don't really feel the ball that well. You know, it's great for power, but it's not that great for finesse. So I think when these kids are developing their games, they're sensing that. So they're like, don't even go there. You know, I don't even want to learn a slice or learn touch or, you know, because I was coaching some of the best players in the country by the time I, you know, after about 5 or 6 years at Vanderbilt, we were, you know, up in the top of the SEC. We got to the finals, the NCAAs, and I was amazed at these, you know, 18, 19-year-old boys, that they really didn't know how to volley. They didn't know how to hit a good slice backhand. They weren't complete players by any means. They were, like you said, they were just sluggers. They pounded the ball from the baseline really well, but they didn't have the complete game. They didn't know how to slow it down. They didn't know how to hit angles. They didn't know how to, you know, hit a good, nice slice, soft ball, low to the person's backhand, chip a return every once in a while. So I think it's up to the coaches to make sure. I mean, we've got, you know, Roger Federer's now, I guess, you know, obviously towards the end of his career, but one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player of all time. And you couldn't find a better example of a complete player with all the shots. So
I know you have stated publicly that the winning the gold medal is probably the highlight of your career. Am I correct with what I read?
I always say it's, you know, other than, because I have to say that other than having the days my children were born, that was the best day of my life. But, you know, now that my kids are grown, I can say winning the gold medal was way better than the days they were born. Sorry, kids.
And I noticed with your wife sitting here, was that in the top five?
Oh, I'm sorry, honey. Yeah, you know, it was, you know, gold medal was just below the day I married Christina.
What was that moment like for you when they were playing the national anthem?
Oh, boy. You know, I can still remember it. You know, when we had the opportunity to go to the Olympics, it was so such an awesome and such a great honor. And then to find ourselves in the finals and playing for the gold medal, knowing that nobody remembers who won the silver medal, and you don't even bring it up, you know. And then the match itself, we were up two sets to love. They came back two sets all. I serve for the gold medal twice in the fifth set. And I've always said that if we had not won that match, we ended up winning 9-7 in the fifth set. But if we had not won that match, I would still be like the American homeless dude walking around the streets of Seoul with like a beard down to my knees, you know, just like eating out of trash. I couldn't have gone home. There's no way I could ever face any of my friends or family or anyone, you know, serving for the gold medal twice. Thank goodness Seguso held serve and we won. And so the, you know, just the thinking we were going to lose, thinking we'd blown it, and then to come back and win. And then, so the elation of winning and then the elation of stepping up on the podium and having them play the national anthem and watch the flag go up on our behalf, it was, you know, the whole thing. I mean, tearing up, the hair standing up on the back of the neck, chills, weak knees, all that kind of stuff.
We got a couple minutes left. Let me compare that then to the feeling at center court at Wimbledon mm-hmm. and winning a championship there.
You know, I guess the reason for me that Wimbledon is so close, if not equal, is that when you're a child growing up, I remember so many times my friends or my parents of my friends would say, oh, you know, you're going to play at Wimbledon someday. That's what always, nobody would say, oh, you're going to play at the U.S. Open. Wimbledon is it's like the Masters in golf. I mean, it's the tournament with all the tradition. It crosses over all sport genres. I mean, everybody knows Wimbledon. So when you walk on the hallowed grounds of the center court at Wimbledon and you turn and you bow to, you know, the Duke or Duchess of Kent or, you know, whoever else is there, any royalty at the time, it's just like, oh boy, you know. And I feel now like I've made it. I've arrived. You know, this is the coup de grace for a tennis player. And so winning a Wimbledon title, you know, it just was something that I think every tennis player aspires for.
In reflection, when you think back in your private moments and have a chance to look at your career, the successes that you had, the path that you took, the people that you met, all of that, what is it that means the most to Ken Flack?
Wait, Ron, you asked some pretty deep questions. That's very good. Very good. You're good at your job. You know, oddly enough, if I just, now that I'm 15 years removed from the tour, it was the friendships, it was the relationships that I made, and the people that I met all over the world that I know today, if I called them or I was able to get in touch with them, you know, on an email or something, or if my wife let me on Facebook, they would be like, wow, you know, we would just pick up right where we left off. You know, they were that close and that good of friends, and the relationship meant so much. So that, to me, is what tennis brought, how it enriched my life and enhanced my life. You know, the money's pretty much gone. The trophies are collecting dust. But those relationships, you know, they'll go on forever.
Where is the gold medal?
Right now, it's in my under my boxers in my underwear drawer.
We only have a minute left, but you and Christina, is it right? 9 kids?
Yes, we have 9 kids between us. Yes, yes, I have 5, and then my lovely wife has 4, so we have 9 between us.
Yeah. How do you balance that?
You know, cocktails hour starts a little earlier in our house, you know. We usually, my wife doesn't approve of drinking. She usually gives me like a kombucha or some green juice to drink. You know, it's something that you're kind of used to. I mean, obviously, you know, my oldest son now is 26, so I've got 4 20 and above. We go all the way down to 5 years old, though, and we were just talking today again about, can you believe we have a toddler that's 5 years old? Whew, we're too old for this. They're exhausting, but you know, you just, I think that having each other is, you know, leaning on each other is how we get through it.
Listen, I want to compliment you on the great career that you had. You were a champion both on the court and off the court as well, and thank you for talking so honestly about a sport that you played with great distinction, and you certainly did play it well for the U.S. Davis Cup team and, of course, winning the gold medal as well. Ken, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Ron.
Ken Flack with us in the studio as we talk a little bit of tennis. He was one of the top men's doubles players in the world, winning 36 doubles titles during his career and playing on the U.S. Davis Cup team and winning a gold medal at the Olympics. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.